Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here, and I've been waiting for, I don't know, 4 or 5 months to say, it's a beautiful Thursday afternoon along Michigan Avenue. Dennis Rodkin's in the studio as well. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch Thursday edition. Dennis comes in from time to time to talk about real estate. Welcome back, Dennis.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Good. And so it's not just the skies that are sunny, it's the foreclosure news.
Yeah, that is
sunny-ish,
actually,
right?
Sunny-ish, yeah. Still a little bit of a cloud. Yeah, so less foreclosure activity in the first quarter of 2016 in the Chicago area than at any time since the first quarter of 2007. We're dropping way down. 2007 is when the foreclosure crisis was really just sort of in its, not even yet in its infancy. It was
right.
Just barely a glimmer. So we've dropped real far. It was a big plunge from last year. We're still above where we were in the pre-recession years, but we've come down to a much more... much less alarming point.
Right, okay, so numbers, some numbers that you wrote that you can read, too, at chicagobusiness.com, all of Dennis's stories. Chicago area foreclosure activity peaked in 2009, fourth quarter, at 44,009.
And that's
a quarter.
And that's during the quarter, yeah. Right. Now, that was all stages of foreclosure. That's not everybody who's about to lose their house. That's
right.
you've just gotten a letter from your bank saying we're going to do it all the way through. We're taking away your house.
And right now we're at, what, 15,004?
15,004, yeah.
Okay.
So we're at about a third of where we were at the peak. But the pre-recession average, all this data comes from RealtyTrack, and they figured out our pre-recession average, which is sort of what would the normal level be, and that's about 2,000 below where we are. That's 13,000-something, and we're at 15,000-something.
How are we doing nationally, do you know? Because we lagged behind, right?
We do. We lag behind on so many of these indicators. There are several major cities, so we're 17% above our pre-recession level, so we're still carrying a higher load than we were during the normal years. There are several major cities that are below their pre-recession level, so they're better off. They have completely
right.
healed foreclosure-wise, and those include L.A., Boston, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Phoenix, big cities.
I'd like to live in. I mean, those are nice cities.
Yeah, they're all nice cities, and Phoenix had a much harsher foreclosure or much bigger foreclosure burden than we have.
Do we know why they came back and we didn't so quickly?
Yeah, there were a couple of things. One is we're a state where the judge gets involved. We're a judicial state, so it takes longer to clear out a single foreclosure. Plus, I did a couple of stories during the peak of it. One of the things that was easier to do out there was for an investor to buy a foreclosure, fix it up as a rental, a summer home, or a vacation home, that sort of thing. Most of our foreclosures aren't in Phoenix-like neighborhoods.
No, they're not. Okay, I'm going to read. Well, this is a mouthful. Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Koenig Rubloff Realty Group. Right? That's a big, fat merger of realty companies.
17-syllable name. As of 2 years ago. Yeah, so they merged 2 years ago. This was big news at the time. They were then branded with the Berkshire Hathaway name, which is the Warren Buffett name.
Right.
It's an attempt to create
a national... Which didn't seem to be in the market here.
Which was not in the market here. And so that was their entree. So the news out today is I have data from a consulting group showing the size, the sales volume for all the major real estate agencies in the Chicago area. All up except that one, except Berkshire Hathaway. Some up as much as 30%, up 10% and 2%. Berkshire Hathaway down a little more than 2% for its second year in a row, those 2 years being the time since they were created out of this merger.
Do we know why that would be? I have a theory.
Let's hear your theory.
Okay, it's really not worth much, but it's my theory. Elise Glink's going to be on after the next half hour to talk about branding and brand loyalty and building a brand. And when you got 17 syllables that start with the first two syllables are brand new, you know, maybe people aren't as comfortable or willing to go that way.
That may be a piece of it. That's what I wrote when they merged. No. I think it's probably true. When they merged, I wrote about the idea that Berkshire Hathaway is not a name that's known here, while, for example, Baird & Warner and At Properties, which are locally owned agencies on that same list, are names you know. So these names people knew, Koenig & Stry, Rubloff, they got pushed back into that long multi-syllable name. I think that may be part of it. Their executive said that it's largely because they have a heavily luxury market, and the luxury market hasn't been doing real well. One of my concerns is all the agencies on that list work the luxury market as well, and they're up. Another person said, well, you know, it's that merging of two cultures. It takes a while after a merger. But the truth is, I don't know why, but we do know that the numbers say they're down. They were down over 10% last year, almost 3% this year. And again, everybody else is up.
It's a mouthful. Okay, I love when you come in because I learn about new neighborhoods. And the one I want to ask you about today is called Bowmanville.
Bowmanville.
Which I did not know of before.
Well, you know, the cool thing about that is for you and others, it is a new neighborhood, Steve, but it's not an old neighborhood. It's a neighborhood, it's a name, I should say, that dates to the 1860s, 1850s.
Right. So if you lived in Bowmanville, you've known it for quite a while.
Exactly. Anytime over the last 160 years. Bowmanville is immediately south of Rose Hill Cemetery, which is pretty easy to locate for most people who know the city. And it's not unknown. It's been a pretty busy place, but it's that has accelerated in the past few years. Bowmanville has Andersonville to its east, Lincoln Square to its south. Now, technically, it's a piece of Lincoln Square, but the hot part of Lincoln Square is just south. Andersonville is just east. Both of those are getting too expensive, so people looking for alternatives are going either west from Andersonville, north from Lincoln Square,
so it's
finding Bowmanville.
It's affordable now?
It's the affordable part. We're talking, you know, you get for $1.1 million what you would get for $1.5 million. So it's not...
Okay.
It's not middle class housing so much anymore, although there are homes that are selling in the $400,000 and $500,000 range. But a lot of that new construction comes in at $1 million and more.
Would it be unfair to pick on Barrington Hills? I mean, I don't know.
Unfair?
We've talked before about these mega mansions, these huge houses, and they're sitting, right? I mean, you write about one at ChicagoBusiness.com that's been, no one's ever lived. It was built 10 years ago.
It was built 10 years ago,
and no one has lived there
10 years. Yeah. And I checked. I said, really? Like, there wasn't a caretaker? There wasn't a renter? No, it sat empty for 10 years. Good news is the builder took care of it. They turned on and off the water in the winter, that sort of thing. So you weren't buying an abandoned house.
Right.
But they built it 10 years ago. They were asking well over $5 million. It sat empty for 10 years and sold early this month for $2 million. And that's the second house to have sat for so long. There's another in Barrington Hills that sat for 9 years.
So what's the future of those homes?
Well, you know, the one we talked about first, that's a 15,000-square-foot house. The question is going to be how long is there an appetite for people, or how much of an appetite is there for people to live that far from the city center in such an enormous house? There's a lot going on with big penthouses in the city. Will these displace those?
Dennis Rodkin writes for Crane Chicago Business, and again, ChicagoBusiness.com is the website. Great to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Steve.
You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. You're listening to the Business Lunch. It's Steve Bertrand here on 720 WGN. Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management, Chicago's retirement planning expert, is in the studio with us as well. Bill, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, sir.
It's springtime. I'm sort of celebrating. Everything looks nice.
I didn't want to come in the studio. It's so nice.
It's time to finally put the blade on the mower, maybe get out there next weekend. There was a story I was reading. I think it was a Merrill Lynch age wave study of retirees. And it's an interesting thing because what we worry about before we retire often is different from what we worry about after we
retire,
right?
That's true.
So, and I want to talk about the before, obviously, because that's why we're here. But the after was people concerned about having friends, maybe, or society, or things to do, because sometimes we focus so much on raising money, keeping our head down, and then when you retire, you need to learn how to take up shuffleboard. That's why people do it.
Well, you know, even before the shuffleboard issue, the really big issue that people talk about all the time, as in this article too, is they miss a regular paycheck.
Yeah. Well, and so tell me the difference. Okay, I keep putting away money to my 401k, and you know, I hope to have a little pension and Social Security and all of that one day. But there's going to be a time when I retire when then that becomes static.
That's right. And it's not enough.
Yeah.
It's not enough to maintain your lifestyle.
And so what do you do?
Well, we were talking before we went in the air about someone who came in from the show last week, has a pretty decent-sized portfolio, but he can't enjoy it. He was going on a trip, and he says, Bill, he says, to pay for the trip, I've got to take money out of my portfolio.
Right.
And in his mind...
Which is what he saved it for.
Yeah. But in his mind, he's eating away his principal. And especially in a soft market where he doesn't see that being made back, he's looking at the long term. You know, if I go on this trip, am I going to spend myself to death and not have money to last me for my entire retirement?
What a kick in the head to retire, save money all your life, and then worry, afraid to go. Yeah.
And the key is you have to take a portion of your portfolio and diversify it into an income-producing part of your portfolio so you can have a regular paycheck every month.
All right, what kind of vehicles are we talking about there?
Well, not bonds, that's for sure.
Right.
That's what we used to use bonds for. And when they were paying 6 or 7 or 8% as you got closer to retirement, you move more money from stocks into bonds, and guess what you used for income when you retired? Use the bonds, right? Well, bonds don't cut it anymore. A 10-year Treasury bond is paying a little over 1.7%.
So if I had $1 million in bonds?
$17,000.
Well, I could live off of, maybe not.
It doesn't feel like a million-dollar lifestyle, does it?
Certainly wouldn't be going on vacations at that.
No. So we've got some alternative income strategies that we use, and basically what you're trying to structure for yourself is a regular, dependable monthly income that you can count on.
Do you then live off that income only? Because I'm thinking, you know, there must be a point where you're going to start to dip into that principal too.
Well, you need to dip into the principal to stay up with inflation. But if you can retire and you've planned far enough in advance to do this, where you've got your Social Security, you and your wife's Social Security are stacked on top of each other, and then you have a monthly income coming in that at a minimum closes the gap in what you need, and really, really a lot more. I've been doing this for over 30 years. I've never had somebody come in my office and say, I've got too much income in retirement. Can you help me out?
Right, right.
It just doesn't happen.
Well, I do see the psychological benefit of it, too, of just the idea that knowing that there's going to be some sort of check in the mail.
Well, yeah, and if the market goes down, you don't have to feel guilty to pay the mortgage this month
right.
by taking money out of the growth portfolio. You've got income coming in. And if you got too much, you throw it in the bank.
Does that ever happen? Do you ever have too much retirement income coming in?
Well, not that anybody complains about.
No,
but basically, you want more than what you need.
So what'd you tell the guy who was afraid to go pick up seashells because he didn't want to dip into his principal?
Well, I told him to go on the vacation. When he came back, we're going to structure a portfolio for him that right. we can create that income.
And so what do you do when... I know we're going to have an advertisement for you coming up, but, you know, people come in, $500,000. How do you structure it?
We take a portion of it, depending upon how long they have until they retire, and we start setting up a portion of their portfolio that is an income generator. That's what it's designed to do. And we set up enough so that they can maintain their lifestyle, that when they retire, they can keep doing the things they like.
Do you do this?
And a little bit more, too.
Does this come before retirement or at retirement?
Before retirement. We talk about 5 to 10 years from retirement. You really need to start working on this stuff. The earlier that you start working on, the more powerful that you can make the income be.
Right.
I know you're going to talk about this in a moment, but we're going to do something special for the listeners today. The first five people to call in, when you give the phone number, I'm going to sit down with them personally and help them put together a retirement plan, an income plan, everything that they're going to need for retirement. So,
we have a couple of brochures from Florida where they can go on vacation and not worry about their principal.
Southern Italy, too.
Southern Italy, too. I could take care of that.
Yes, sir.
Bill Geiger, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you, sir.
You know, nothing can be more frustrating than working hard your entire life, saving as much as possible for retirement, and then having no idea how you're going to make your nest egg last 20, 30 years or more. That's where Bill, Chicago's retirement expert, comes in. Bill Geiger joins us on Thursdays and would like to make this special offer to you. He was just talking about it. A full-blown financial plan. It's a $3,000 value, absolutely free with no obligation to the first five callers who have at least $500,000 saved for retirement. Just give them a call, 800-681-2498. That's 800-681-2498. You deserve the security and independence of knowing that you're doing the right thing with your retirement nest egg. So be one of the first five callers for your complimentary individual, no obligation, full-blown financial plan. You've earned it. Now it's time for your money to start working for you. Call Geiger Wealth Management today at 800-681-2498. Bill Geiger, great to see you again.
Great to see you, sir.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. Michael Heidemann is the producer of the Wintrust Business Lunch. So if you ever give him a call or maybe want to have an idea for the program, you can send Michael an email, mheidemann2ns@wgnradio.com. Or just talk to him. He's a really nice guy, and he's always got such cheerful bumps. Thank you for that, Michael. All right, Delise Glink is the co-host of the Monday Morning Marketing Podcast. You can get that at WGN Plus. And really, we don't have time to talk about all the things you do, Elise.
Well, then let's not.
Give me a couple, though. Where else can people find you?
How about EliseGlink.com or on Twitter at Glink?
Okay, so Dennis Rodkin was just in the studio from Cranes. And
yeah.
I don't know if you – I didn't expect you would listen, have time to listen, but he was talking about how the realtor companies in Chicago are doing pretty well. You know, sales are picking up. But there was one exception. One real estate company created 2 years ago in a merger has seen its sales volume drop in each of the 2 years since. Now, I said I thought it might be a bit of a branding issue, knowing absolutely nothing about branding, but I knew you were coming up. Anyway, it's a familiar name. I'm going to read it to you. This is the name of the company that would fit on the for sale sign. Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Koenig Rubloff Realty Group.
So they're trying, you know, so Berkshire Hathaway spent millions and millions of dollars to buy up basically real estate companies all over the country. There were a few that they started out with on the East Coast that were kind of the original company, and they spread across buying small to medium-sized independents. The reason that they haven't taken away Prudential and Rubloff and Koenig & Stray and those names that you read off, which is hilarious, is that's actually the history of Chicago real estate right there.
It's kind of Macy's and Marshall Field's in a way, isn't it?
It is, but it goes back even deeper. I mean, there's this feeling in the real estate community that when you buy a home and you live in it for 7, 10, 20, I'm now at my house for 22 years, which is amazing given that I'm only 25 years old still in my head. But no,
just keep talking.
I'm just going to, you know, carry on here. Long relationships in real estate. And so the idea being that, well, we've got this new brand with a new color, right? Maroon. You've seen the signs, maroon and white and black. But we're going to try and maintain some of those connection points when people think of Koenig & Stray or Rubloff had a very high-end brand that they had really pushed for many, many years. They don't want to lose that. And it's just inartful.
Well, it is an artful, so then why don't they keep those brands and just own the companies?
Because maintaining individual brands is expensive. And these days, it's just how many, you'd have maybe 5 or 7 social media points for each of those brands. So you'd end up with somebody running 25 Twitter accounts. It's just not economical.
All right, so Cohn & Wolf, the public relations company, is out with its ranking of the most authentic brands in the world. And I'm interested in this. So I had a guest on earlier this week, and she was talking about, you know, branding yourself, individual brands and things. And it's almost become a term, especially when it comes to individuals, that is manipulation. You know, develop your brand. To me, that's like, well, manipulate your identity to make you attractive or salesworthy. I almost don't find that as a complimentary term. Very different when it comes to big corporations and their brand, correct?
You know, it's interesting. I think that big corporations have spent so much money, countless billions of dollars, on creating what you know, this company, Cohn & Wolf, calls the authentic brand. And it's sort of interesting because in my mind, it's all manufactured.
Well,
right?
That's, you know, it's, right. As we're talking, I'm thinking, how naive do I sound? Because I think Disney's just Disney. They've earned that brand. Well, of course they've cultivated that. Every other company has created their own sort of artificial brand.
Well, think about what is the symbol of Disney, and it's Mickey Mouse, which is a cartoon drawing. Right, it's a little bit like Tony the Tiger and Kellogg.
Yeah.
BMW, which is number 2 on their list of 10 brands, BMW has sort of a German powerhouse and the little icon that they have in the front of the car. What I thought was really interesting is that the next four brands, are all digital. Right, it's Microsoft, Amazon, Apple, and Intel.
Yes.
And that was really interesting. I don't think 10 or 15 years ago that you would have seen them as being authentic brands.
Well, right. And I guess, you know, I can think of Intel doing it, right, because they talked about for years ago, or their ad campaign was something like, what's inside?
Yeah, the computer. Intel inside, exactly.
Right. And so that's how people would know that. But otherwise, I don't know how that brand would resonate with anyone.
No, it's interesting. They really had to create something out of nothing. But the same is true with Microsoft. And we should tell everybody that according to this particular public relations firm, what they measure is when consumers say a brand is authentic, they are talking about how a company delivers consistently on what it promises, whatever that is, protects consumers' data, respects privacy, interacts with their customers with transparency and integrity. So they were trying to find characteristics that would cut across all different sorts of companies. And it's interesting to just kind of look that these top 10 authentic brands, which also includes another car company, Audi,
right,
Samsung, right, for your phone, Adidas, and Lego.
Well, where does Lego come from?
Yeah, I don't know. There's a Lego craze out there. Either your kids loved it or they didn't. My kids didn't love it. Their father, my husband Sam, adored Legos, and he was the one who was constantly sorting them back into their colors and their shapes and their boxes and all the rest. So, but Lego is really the building blocks, and I think that people must assume that that company just is really transparent about what it does and how it interacts.
Okay, so when I look at these and I wonder about the brand, I mean, Disney's brand needs to be authentic because you need to know you're going to a Disney park. If you're going to drop your cash in a park, you need to know what you think will come with the Disney experience. And maybe that's the same with Lego. Lego probably faces all sorts of competition when it comes to building blocks, cheaper versions. So they need to spend money on their brand so that people will know that they're getting something special when they pay for Lego.
I think so. I think that what happens here with authenticity is whatever expectations have been created, how well does the company fulfill them? And that's really a brand authenticity issue for any kind of a company that's listening, right? You know, you have to think about what is the expectation? How do you step outside and imagine how a customer or a vendor or anybody you're going to do business with, how do they perceive you as a company? And are you delivering on that promise? Are you over-delivering on that promise?
Does Cohen & Wolf ever come out with the top 10 inauthentic brands?
I don't know. I'll have to look and see.
Now, that would be fun to talk about.
It would be very fun to talk about. I don't know. It would be a little bit hard because I think inauthenticity, right, is something that's extremely personal.
And it's all around us. Elise Glink, nice to talk to you again this afternoon.
Good to talk to you, Steve. Thanks.
Check out Elise's podcast. It's at WGNplus.com, Monday Morning Marketing. All right, we'll talk again soon, Elise.
Thanks. Sounds good.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 7. Oh, when we come back, we're going to talk about Ghost Bed. It's a bed that you order online. It comes in a box. You open up the box and poof, you've got your own bed. Thank you. Oh, it's Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, and I'm about to introduce you to the future. And his name is Mark Warner. Mark, welcome to the Business Lunch. I'm sorry, Mark. Yep. How are you?
I'm great.
I hit the wrong button there. What a terrible start. I hit the wrong button to say hello, but I'm glad you made the time to join us today. And I said welcome to the future because, you know, we talk a lot here about e-commerce and all of that. And the fact I was bringing up earlier, and I know that you are a wholesaler, I think, involved when it comes to mattresses and mattress stores. They seem to be everywhere. But I'm reading that they are going to be threatened by people buying their mattresses online, and that's happening more and more. You've got the product to do it. This bed called Ghost Bed. Explain it for me.
Well, mattress stores have become kind of like Starbucks. They're on every corner now.
Why is that, Mark?
It's a big industry. It's almost a $20 billion industry. Everyone needs to sleep, and sleep is critical to your health, and you spend the third of your life doing it. So it's really important you get a good mattress and make the investment. And even an expensive mattress works out to be 50 cents a night, like a glass of wine or something like that. But what we've done is we've taken our wholesale business that we've had for 15-plus years, selling to all the majors, the furniture stores, and Costco's and Kohl's and Sears and online people like Groupon, and we've now developed a product that we're going direct to consumer, and that's a space that's getting really hot these days. And one thing that allows us to bridge that gap is by offering a 101-night sleep trial. So if you don't like it, you can return it free of charge, and we pick it up and we take care of it. We actually donate it to a charity, hopefully a charity of your choice.
I think maybe one of the beds I bought, oh, it's probably been 30 years ago now, actually came from Marshall Fields. They had a bed section, right? And I order the bed. I go, I lay down on it. The big green truck pulls up, and you've got these guys carrying the mattress in the box spring three flights up the stairs. That's not the way the ghost bed arrives.
No, yeah. That's old school. So we take a king mattress. We backpack it into a box that's 40 inches by 20 inches. It might weigh 110 pounds, but it's very easy. You don't have to take a day off of work to wait for the delivery man. It will be at your front door. You bring it into your house. You open it up in your bedroom, and it decompresses in 30 seconds, and you're ready to sleep on it. It's just a huge change in the technology. The sleep quality is amazing. We're delivering a queen mattress that I would normally make the same mattress and sell it to the successor to a Marshall Fields, a Macy's, or someone along those lines. They would retail it for probably $3,000 or $4,000. The ghost bed in Queen is $750, and we even offer zero interest financing for 12 months. We're making it very convenient for the customer.
What does it rest on?
Buy online.
Does it rest on the floor, or is there?
We have a matching foundation box spring that also comes in a small box that you can put together like Lincoln Logs in 15 minutes. So everything is very efficient. I'm a Chicago guy. We've got our Chicago factory, our Chicago facilities. We have 8 facilities around the United States. So we have a partnership with FedEx. We can basically get to almost any house in the United States in 24 hours.
Let me ask you this. So if this bed comes in the mail and you open it up, I think of a sponge almost. You know, it expands and flattens out. And then, you know, you've got the long guarantee. You decide that you don't like it. How do you put the genie back in the bottle, or how do you return it?
You don't worry about that. You call us up and say, I'm not happy with this, which is an incredibly small percent of our customer base because we made a great, great product. And we come and pick it up, and then we'll take it and deliver it to some kind of a charity.
I heard this might double your sales. You think it's going to double your sales?
I think it's going to quadruple our sales. It's absolutely a moonshot. I've been in business for 38 years. I come from the Warner Ladder family.
Right.
We've been around for 100 years, and I've seen a lot of different businesses. We've had a lot of different businesses over the years, and I've never seen anything that's just such a sea change in such a big marketplace that has had such an incredible growth trajectory.
Yeah, it's amazing because we've changed the way we buy something, we've changed the thing we're buying in a way.
I mean, think of it. My wife says, I would never buy a mattress online. And then I said, well, but I'm giving you 101 nights. And she said, you know, then I think I might do that. Because she goes, I buy everything else online.
Right, right.
Because I stopped going to stores. I'm tired of fighting the parking lots and all the other hassles. It's just easier to buy it online and then keep what I want and not.
And people buying their first mattresses don't know how to go in a store anyway. You know?
Well, the millennial is definitely a target customer, but the 90-year-old guy is also a customer.
Yeah, because
you have 90-year-old customers that are finding us from Facebook.
We're talking talking to Mark Werner. He's the CEO of GhostBed. And, Mark, I just got 30 seconds left, but there's another innovation, not just the bed, but the way you're going to market it in town. You're the first to partner with this new company, Rapify, where they basically – right? Is it Rapify?
Rapify. They're the Uber of – outdoor mobile advertising. So rather than a stationary billboard that I used to have throughout Chicago, these cars are wrapped. We're going to have a fleet of cars May 1st going all over Chicago. We're a sponsor of the Cubs. So you'll see cars by the Cubs. You'll see us at the Cubs. You'll see us you hear us on the Blackhawks playoff game.
Yeah.
You're going to see us all over Chicago.
We're going to be Chicago roots. I'm sorry. We're going to be listening to you on Blackhawks playoff games for several months in the future, just so you know, Mark. I have great confidence.
We hope so.
Well, listen, it's a remarkable product. I'm flat out of time. I wish I could talk to you more about it because I just think it's cool, the fact that, you know, the vehicle by which we buy something is changing. It's going to change the way we sleep. I wish you the best of luck, and I hope we can talk again sometime
Thank
in the future.
So
you bet.
Anytime. Thank you.
Mark Werner is the CEO of GhostBed. Check it out. GhostBed.com. You're not going to be able to miss it. You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.